From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
And if I have to stay out here all month in this heat, it's not anything compared to what our soldiers are going through and what the people of Iraq are going through.
I've heard her position from others, which is get out of Iraq now. And it would be a mistake for the security of this country.
I think Mrs. Sheehan bears some responsibility for this, and also for the responsibility of other American families who have lost sons and daughters in Iraq.
I had to be here. I had to support Cindy. I had to support the mothers. I came because what she started is very important. I think it's going to make history.
I can't believe it. Everybody is coming up to me and saying thank you for being here. Thank you for being here.
Cindy Sheehan has been the face of the U.S. anti-war movement for the past 2 years. In August 2005, she set up Camp Casey outside President Bush's Crawford estate in memory of her son, Casey, killed in Iraq. Now Cindy says she's stepping back from her role as a leading campaigner against the Iraq War. In this Democracy Now! Special, Cindy Sheehan joins us for the hour to talk about her decision. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court has issued a ruling imposing new limits on employment discrimination complaints brought mostly by women and people of color. In a 5-4 opinion, justices ruled discrimination complaints cannot be filed after more than 6 months. In a rare move, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg read her dissent from the bench and urged Congress to overturn the decision. Business groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are welcoming the judgment while women's advocates are voicing criticism. Marsha Greenberger of the National Women's Law Center said, quote, "This essentially says tough luck to employees who don't immediately challenge their employer's discriminatory acts, even if the discrimination continues to the present time." The Bush administration has announced plans to name former Deputy Secretary of State Robert Zoellick to replace Paul Wolfowitz as head of the World Bank. Zoellick spent 4 years as the U.S. Trade Representative until 2005. He went on to the State Department before leaving to join the financial firm Goldman Sachs last year. Zoellick previously served as a paid advisor to the energy company Enron before its collapse. He was an early backer of the U.S. invasion of Iraq and a co-signatory of the neoconservative Project for a New American Century letter calling for Iraq regime change. Public health advocates are criticizing the appointment. Dr. Paul Zeitz, executive director of the Global AIDS Alliance, called Zoellick a terrible choice, saying, quote, "He's been a close friend to the brand name pharmaceutical industry and the trade agreements he's championed block patients' access to generic medication. As a market fundamentalist, he's also much less likely to stand up for a strong and effective public sector." In Iraq, U.S. and Iraqi forces are carrying out a series of raids around Baghdad in an effort to find 5 British citizens abducted from a government building. 40 heavily armed men in police uniforms seized the 5 Tuesday in broad daylight from an office in the finance ministry. The kidnapped victims were initially reported to be German citizens, but Britain now says the 4 are British security contractors, while the 5th is a British employee of the U.S. consulting firm Bearing Point. In other Iraq news, the Pentagon's announced 10 U.S. troops were killed in Iraq Monday. Their deaths make this month the 3rd deadliest for the U.S. military of the Iraq War. April and May now also mark the deadliest 2-month period since the invasion, with at least 209 service members killed. Meanwhile, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is coming under criticism for significantly undercounting the number of U.S. war dead. General Peter Pace was interviewed by CBS News on Memorial Day.
When you take a look at the life of a nation and all that's required to keep us free, you know, we had more than 3,000 Americans murdered on 11 September of 2001. The number who have died, sacrificed themselves since that time is approaching that number.
As General Pace spoke, the U.S. toll had reached at least 3,455. Just under 3,000 people were killed in the 9/11 attacks. In other Iraq news, a new court-martial begins today in the killings of 24 Iraqis in Haditha in November of 2005. Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chassani is the highest ranking of the seven Marines charged in the massacre. An American member of al-Qaeda has warned the U.S. will face an attack worse than 9/11 unless it ends all involvement in Muslim lands. In a video released Tuesday, California native Adam Yahya Gadan, known as Azam al-Amriki, calls on President Bush to withdraw all U.S. military and spies from Islamic countries, free all Muslims from U.S. jails, and end support for Israel. Gadan is wanted in the United States on charges of treason. A bipartisan congressional delegation is in Lebanon to back the Lebanese government in its fight against an Islamic militia. The U.S. has expedited military aid to Lebanon since the clashes broke out last week. This is Republican Senator Nick Rahal.
As we speak, we are delivering more military assistance to the Lebanese army quicker than what would normally be delivered because of the circumstances that exist in the north. And our country is supportive of whatever actions the Lebanese army, not a militia, the Lebanese army may take to impose order and justice upon terrorists that exist within the Lebanese borders.
Congressman Nick Rahal. Tension is increasing with Russia over U.S. plans for a new missile shield in Eastern Europe. On Tuesday, Russia says it had successfully test-fired a new intercontinental ballistic missile designed to overcome missile defense systems. The test came as Russian President Vladimir Putin warned a U.S. missile deployment would have consequences.
Our point is clear. We consider it harmful and dangerous to turn Europe into a powder keg and to stuff it with new weapons.
President Bush has imposed new sanctions on the Sudanese government over the humanitarian crisis in Darfur. The U.S. will bar at least 30 Sudanese companies from the U.S. and impose sanctions on two government officials and a rebel leader.
I call on President Bashir to stop his obstruction and to allow the peacekeepers in and to end the campaign of violence that continues to target innocent men, women, and children. And I promise this to the people of Darfur. The United States will not avert our eyes from a crisis that challenges the conscience of the world.
The administration also says it'll seek tougher actions at the UN Security Council, including an arms embargo on the Sudanese government. Some 200,000 people have been killed and 2.5 million displaced in what the Bush administration calls a genocide. The Chinese government is leading calls against sanctions on its major oil partner. This is China's Darfur envoy, Liu Guijin.
The essence of the Darfur issue is not the so-called genocide. It came from the conflicts among different parties for water and land, which originated from poverty and a less developed status. It's because of the shortages of resources. So it is a problem of development. If the international community sincerely hopes to help resolve the Darfur issue the same as other issues in Africa, it should provide more development assistance alongside with humanitarian aid.
An Al Jazeera cameraman jailed at Guantanamo without charge is calling for the release of the kidnapped BBC reporter Alan Johnston, abducted in Gaza more than 2 months ago. Sami Al-Haj has been jailed for more than 5 years. In a letter released by his lawyer, Haj says, quote, "While the United States has kidnapped me and held me for years on end, this is not a lesson that Muslims should copy." In Nigeria, the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer is facing criminal charges for its alleged role in the deaths of children given an unapproved drug in a clinical trial. State authorities have charged the company on 8 counts and are seeking more than $2 billion in damages. The lawsuit alleges Pfizer gave around 100 children an untested drug called Tovan, known to have life-threatening side effects and without the consent of their families. Nigeria says the testing led to an unspecified number of deaths and left others deaf, paralyzed, blind, or brain damaged. In Iran, 3 American citizens have been charged with espionage and endangering national security. Hala Esfandiari, director of the Middle East program at the Washington-based Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars, has been jailed since earlier this month. Also charged are urban planning consultant Kian Tajbakhsh and journalist Parnaz Azima. All 3 face the death penalty if convicted. On Tuesday, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice called the charges a perversion of the rule of law. In health news, the U.S. government has isolated a man who may have exposed passengers to a deadly strain of tuberculosis on two recent transatlantic flights. Officials are trying to notify passengers who traveled on Air France from Atlanta to Paris or to the U.S. on Czech Air earlier this month. This is Dr. Julie Gerberding, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
We are well aware of the fact that taking a measure such as issuing an order of isolation is unusual. In fact, people at CDC don't recall us doing this since 1963. So we always want to balance personal liberties with the requirement to protect people's health.
The decision marks at least the second confinement of a TB carrier. 27-year-old Robert Daniels is being held against his will in a Phoenix hospital ward reserved for sick prisoners. And finally, an American citizen has returned to the U.S. after an ordeal that saw him imprisoned in three East African countries. 24-year-old Amir Mohamed Mashal was detained in Kenya, transferred to Somalia, and then sent to Ethiopia, where he was jailed for 3 months without charge. Questions have been raised over whether Mashal was held as part of the secret CIA program to jail detainees in foreign prisons. The FBI had accused him of fighting for a radical Islamic movement, but is now declining to press charges. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn to Cindy Sheehan, who's just announced she's stepping away from the anti-war movement after 2 years of being the nation's most visible critic of the war in Iraq. She began speaking out against the invasion and occupation of Iraq after her 24-year-old son, Army Specialist Casey Sheehan, was killed in Iraq in Sadr City on April 4, 2004. Cindy Sheehan made headlines around the world in August 2005 when she staged a campout to pressure President Bush to meet her as he vacationed at his Crawford estate. On Monday, Cindy Sheehan announced her resignation as the face of the anti-war movement. She said she's stepping back in part because of hostility from Democrats who she's criticized for supporting the war. Cindy Sheehan also cited repeated threats on her life, strains on her health and family, and divisions inside the peace movement. She wrote, quote, "When I started to hold the Democratic Party to the same standards I held the Republican Party, support for my cause started to erode, and the left started labeling me with the same slurs the right used. I guess no one paid attention to me when I said that the issue of peace and people dying for no reason is not a matter of left or right, but right and wrong." In a few minutes, Cindy Sheehan will join us in Sacramento. But first, we look back at how she helped galvanize the anti-war movement over the past 2.5 years. Her name was first mentioned in the national press a month before the 2004 election when she appeared in a TV ad sponsored by the Move On PAC.
His sergeant said, "Sheehan, you don't have to go because my son was a mechanic. He was a Humvee mechanic." And Casey said, "Where my chief goes, I go." And he knew what had to be done. He died in his best friend's arms in Iraq. I imagined it would have hurt if one of my kids was killed, but I never thought it would hurt this bad. Especially someone so honest and brave as Casey, my son. When you haven't been honest with us, when you and your advisors rushed us into this war, how do you think we felt when we heard the Senate report that said there was no link between Iraq and 9/11.
I, George Walker Bush.
I, George Walker Bush.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
After President Bush was reelected, Sheehan formed Gold Star Families for Peace with Celeste Zapala and other mothers. They traveled to Washington to protest President Bush's inauguration.
Well, yesterday I was with Celeste when we tried to get a meeting with our Secretary of Defense. And we've been trying for weeks. We've been emailing, writing, calling. They finally stopped taking our calls. And I just saw all these people today cheering for them and their policies. And I think if I had like 25 grand, I would probably have access to everybody in this administration. But I've paid a price that is priceless. You can't put a price on what I've given to this country.
I gave them my oldest son. Not my only son, but my oldest son. And they don't even have the courtesy to reply to us, to say, no, we're not going to meet with you, or, you know, maybe later, or would you like to meet with another aide? They don't even have the courtesy to meet with Gold Star families.
Cindy Sheehan was ignored by the Bush administration and much of the corporate press. By August of 2005, she could no longer be silenced. Joined by a group of veterans and anti-war activists, Cindy Sheehan set up what became known as Camp Casey outside President Bush's estate in Crawford, Texas. She said she would stay there until the president met with her so she could ask him a question: for what noble cause did my son die?
And if I have to stay out here all month in this heat, it's not anything compared to what our soldiers are going through and what the people of Iraq are going through.
As hundreds joined Cindy Sheehan in Crawford, President Bush refused to meet with her.
Listen, I sympathize with Mrs. Sheehan. She feels strongly about her position. And she has every right in the world to say what she believes. This is America. She has a right to her position. And I've thought long and hard about her position. I've heard her position from others, which is get out of Iraq now. And it would be a mistake for the security of this country and the ability to lay the foundations for peace in the long run if we were to do so.
Cindy Sheehan soon became the frequent target of media attacks from Bill O'Reilly and others.
I think Mrs. Sheehan bear some responsibility for this, and also for the responsibility of other American families who have lost sons and daughters in Iraq, who feel that this kind of behavior borders on treasonous.
Despite the attacks, Camp Casey continued to grow. This is former State Department official Ann Wright.
We started with one car staying overnight, one tent, two tents, three tents. Now we've got, I counted last night, we had 80 cars and about 40 tents that stayed the night here. And during the course of the day, we'll be having probably 300 to 400 people that'll be coming through from all over the country to spend a couple of hours, maybe a day or two. It's a remarkable outpouring from America.
Nadja McCaffrey and other mothers who lost sons in Iraq also joined Cindy in Crawford.
I had to be here. I had to support Cindy. I had to support the mothers. I came because what she started is very important. I think it's going to make history. This is the first time when we have some attention. I'm talking about the war, the Gold Star family especially. And all the mothers must join, and we are doing it right now.
President Bush left Crawford without meeting Cindy Sheehan. But by then, she had become the face of the anti-war movement and one of the most famous peace activists in the world.
I can't believe it. Everybody is coming up to me and saying, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. If it wasn't for the thousands and thousands of people that came to Camp Casey, if it wasn't for the millions that supported us, I would still be sitting in that ditch. But you guys got me out of the ditch. You got us to our nation's capital. And we mean business, George Bush. And we're going to Congress, and we're going to ask them, how many more of other people's children are you willing to sacrifice for the lies?
As the Iraq War intensified, Cindy Sheehan shifted her criticism to include the Democratic Party as well.
We have basically right now in Congress a one-party system. We have very few Democrats who are speaking to our core values as progressive liberal Democrats, and they are rubber stamping and bobbleheading everything that this administration wants to do. And it's so urgent right now that we have an opposition party. And I believe if Democrats courageously spoke out to their core values, saying this war is wrong, if we voted for it, we shouldn't have, and to call for an end to the occupation of Iraq, I believe that we could have a government that is run with integrity, and we could, the Democrats could have a landslide victory in November if they would act different from the Republicans. And I'm supporting these candidates who are saying that this war is wrong, we need to bring our troops home, and we are not going to support the Republicans who are corrupt and who are leading our country down this path of destruction.
After the Democrats took control of Congress, Cindy Sheehan continued to pressure Democrats over the war and called for the impeachment of President Bush.
This is what we have to do. Right now, at this minute, we have to start calling the offices of John Conyers, Nancy Pelosi, Henry Waxman, Steny Hoyer, Harry Reid, your congressperson, and start saying we want accountability.
Now, nearly 2 years after starting Camp Casey, Cindy Sheehan has announced she's stepping back from her role as a leader of the anti-war movement. When we come back from break, Cindy Sheehan joins us live from Sacramento, California, where she's gone home. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to Cindy Sheehan, co-founder of Gold Star Families for Peace, her son Casey killed in Sadr City in Baghdad April 4, 2004. She has authored a number of books, including Peace Mom, A Mother's Journey Through Heartache to Activism. Cindy Sheehan, welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy. Thank you.
It's very good to have you with us. You have just flown home. Yesterday, you arrived in California. Tell us about your decision. On Memorial Day, many people around this country and the world read your painful letter saying, it seems, at least for now, goodbye to your active role as one of the leaders of the peace movement in this country.
Well, it was not an easy decision, and it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision or a quick decision, like going down to Crawford, Texas was very, spur-of-the-moment and very, very not thought out well, but it turned out well. Anyway, I've been thinking about it for a year after last summer when I almost died, and I started thinking about pulling back a little bit, and after I regained some of my strength. I just went back into it full force. And it's hard to work within this movement that is so divided, that is so, really has a lot of negative energy. It's draining. It's drained my energy. And I used to, I still get so much support from so many people. But when, our new left really is just barely right of center. But when people there start criticizing me and calling me the same names that the right has been calling me, I think it's time to reevaluate, pull back, see what other direction we can come at this from.
Cindy, I remember reaching you in the hospital last year, not even knowing that you were ill. But explain what happened.
I was having gynecological problems, and in less than 24 hours, I lost almost half of my blood volume, so I had to go in. I had to have transfusions. I ended up having two emergency surgeries, and than, you know, getting a really bad infection afterwards and having to go back to the hospital for a few days. So, you know, it was, it was very symbolic, life draining. You know, my lifeblood was draining out of me. So that was really touch and go there for a little while. And I've got, you know, regained some of my strength. But that was serious surgery. And I, you know, it's my fault. I didn't give myself enough time to heal physically from it.
Cindy, can we go back? And I know this is extremely painful. April 4th, 2004, though you've spoken a great deal about it publicly in this country and around the world, let's talk about your journey, the subtitle of your book, A Mother's Journey Through Heartache to Activism. When did you learn that Casey was killed?
Well, he was killed in California time. It was a little before 8 in the morning. I woke up at 9 a.m. It was amazing. It was the first day since he'd been gone that I felt any kind of lightness in my spirit. And I woke up. It was Palm Sunday. I went through a Sunday activity, cleaning house, doing laundry, shopping for the week, getting my clothes ready for the next week of work. And my ex-husband and I, who, you know, I was still married to, Casey's dad, we were sitting down watching CNN and eating dinner. We had filet mignon that day. I remember what we were eating. And a report came on CNN. It showed a Humvee burning and said that 8 soldiers had been killed in Baghdad that day. And I looked at Pat and I said, one of them was Casey. And, you know, he got very upset. He goes, well, you know, he's only been there a few days. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of soldiers there. Chances are it can't be Casey. You know, it's statistically very slim that it was Casey, and we don't even know where he is yet. And I just said, I don't care what you say, one of them was Casey. And about 4 hours later, my worst fears were confirmed by the U.S. military.
And talk about your journey through that day. How did you cope?
You know, when I was walking my dogs, I came home, I saw them standing in my living room. You know, I immediately collapsed on the floor. I was screaming. And I think, you know, it's I don't know how I coped. You know, people start coming over, the time starts to just become a blur. You do a lot of drinking, you do a lot of laughing, you remember the good times in that period. But I think the thing that gets you through that horrible period is an intense shock. It's you know, a physical, emotional kind of shock that envelops you. And I remember I didn't go to sleep that night. I didn't go to sleep the next night because I didn't want to wake up. I didn't want to forget that Casey was dead and wake up and have to relive that experience. I was sitting on the porch swing about 6 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning after we heard Casey was killed. And I'm watching people get up and go to work. And I just wanted to scream at them, how can you live your lives when my son is dead? And you know, you're mad at the world for going on when your life has been destroyed and your world, your very world is destroyed. Your whole universe becomes a different place. And then about 8 or 9 months later, the shock starts to wear off. And if you thought you were in pain before, that's when the real pain settles in.
And Cindy, how did you go from your private mourning to becoming more public, to speaking out? When was the first time that you spoke out after Casey died?
It was on the 4th of July, 2004, exactly 3 months after Casey was killed. I went to the Unitarian Universalist Church in Berkeley, California, to support another Gold Star mom, Jane Bright, whose son, Evan Ashcraft, was killed in Iraq in July of 2003. I went to support her because she came up to speak to their congregation. That's when I first physically met Bill Mitchell, whose son Michael was killed in Iraq the same day in the same incident Casey was killed in. And I didn't go there to speak, but I was compelled to speak. And since then, I haven't shut up. So that was the first time, and it was, very meaningful, I think, that it happened on Independence Day, that I found my voice, and I found really my independence from this country that is so destructive to so many people.
Cindy, when you went to Crawford and established Camp Casey in memory of Casey in August of 2005 and said you wanted an hour of the president's time coming from that Dallas Veterans for Peace convention, you had met with the president before. Describe that meeting. Where did it take place? What happened there?
Well, a couple months after we buried Casey, we were invited to go up to Fort Lewis, Washington, state to what we were told have a sit down with the president so he could express the what good wishes of a grateful nation. And so our entire family went up there. We went to the post hospital. We had to go through some very intense security screening, and we sat down in this little tiny room in one of the hospital's waiting rooms, and we sat there. The president came in. We brought about 4 or 5 pictures of Casey from the time he was a baby until he was a soldier. We wanted him to see the pictures of Casey. We wanted to talk about Casey. We decided as a family that we weren't going into any kind of political discussion with him. We wanted to use the short time we had with him to describe what a marvelous person was taken from our family. He didn't look at the pictures. He didn't want to talk about Casey. He kept calling Casey the loved one, to depersonalize Casey as much as he could. He didn't even say him he, of course, didn't use his name or his rank. He called me mom the entire time. Right before George Bush came in, they made us take off all our name tags. So he called me mom, Casey the loved one, and just acted like it really we were at a tea party.
And what did you say to him, the president of the United States?
Well, he came up to me and he took my hand and he looked in my eyes and he said, "Mom, I can't imagine losing a loved one in a war, whether it be an aunt or an uncle or a brother or a sister." And, I stopped him before he can go through the whole litany of how Casey could be related to me besides being my son. And I said, "Wait a second, Mr. President." That's when I still called him Mr. President. Casey was my son, and you have children. Imagine one of your children being killed. And he didn't say anything. And I said, "Trust me, you don't want to go there." And he said, "You're right, I don't." So that was about the one-on-one contact that we had. Then, he talked about how Casey was in a better place and things like that.
You have written in your letter, the letter that you sent out on Memorial Day, that Casey, you have come to the conclusion that Casey died for nothing. Can you explain how you came to this conclusion?
Well, I set out on this quest really to make Casey's death count for something, to make it meaningful, not to be counted as death and destruction, as occupying a country that was no threat to the United States of America, not for lies. I didn't want to think that he died for lies, that he died because my government is callous and has no regard for human life or human suffering. I wanted his death to count for peace. I wanted it to count for love. I wanted it to count for justice. And, in this system we have, it's ruled by the corporations. It's ruled by the corporate war profiteers. They use people like they're things and not people. And I am just really devastated and frustrated with an American population, you know, not counting the people who listen to your show or who watch your show, an American population that doesn't give the Iraq war one, you know, bit of attention, doesn't think about it, doesn't have to think about it. They don't want to think about the death and destruction and the pain that's being caused by the government that they're giving their tacit support to by their silence. You know, we care more about who's the next American Idol, what was in Anna Nicole's refrigerator when she died, than the hundreds of thousands of innocent lives that have been sacrificed for the greed for power and money that this country is always on the prowl for. So it just makes me think that Casey is going to go down in a long line of people who have been sacrificed to the corporate war machine in this country.
We're talking to Cindy Sheehan, lost her son Casey April 4th, 2004, founded Camp Casey, where thousands have come almost on a kind of pilgrimage outside the estate of President Bush in Crawford. Since that time, Cindy has actually bought property in Crawford. Can you talk about your decision to buy the property, Cindy, and now in your letter that you wrote on Memorial Day saying you're putting it up for sale?
Well, after we left Crawford in August of 2005, the McLennan County supervisors passed an ordinance that there's no camping or parking or sleeping along the sides of Prairie Chapel Road. And, you know, we think that was a direct, specific, and targeted ordinance against free speech, against the First Amendment, really, which gives you the right to petition your government for redress of wrongs and gives you the right to peaceable protest. And, you know, no matter what anybody says or any criticism they can have about me or Camp Casey, the protests there have always been very peaceable and always been very positive. So I decided if we wanted to keep having these gatherings in Crawford, Texas, we would have to own property. So I purchased 5 acres. It's right inside the town of Crawford. And I really think now that this part of my activism is over, and that I think Camp Casey has served its purpose. And I think I have gone as far as I can right now in the movement. I've come to a roadblock. I've come to a dead end. I've come to a brick wall. So, and then, of course, I have, you know, decimated all of my resources, my monetary resources on this activism, on this cause, in the movement, that I need, you know, resources to just be able to survive. And so that's why I decided to sell Camp Casey.
Cindy, yesterday after your letter came out on Memorial Day and we announced that you'd be on the broadcast for the hour, we were inundated with email from around the country and around the world. In the next part of the show, I want to read some of it to you, but one of the people who wrote, Marguerite from Santa Fe, said that they wanted to financially help you, describing a Cindy Sheehan retirement from the Peace Movement Fund. What is your response?
We have gotten, in any way people can reach me, we've gotten hundreds and hundreds of emails and, you know, very few negative ones, offering support, offering emotional support, offering places I can go to rest, offering financial support. And I'm very overwhelmed again by the good-hearted nature of Americans. But I think that we have to realize that if you're going to put so much pressure on one individual, that pressure, that person has to be supported continually, not get to the point where I did, where I just had to throw my hands up and say, I give up. I can't do this anymore. I don't have any more energy. I don't have any more money. I don't have any more stamina. I have to go away. And there's so many people, there's so many worthy organizations who are struggling financially, who could do so much, who have people who can be effective voices that aren't supported by the peace movement or people in America, the millions of people in America who oppose George Bush and who oppose the war. If they aren't physically able to get out and do the work, then I think that they, and if they have the financial resources, should be supporting people in the movement who can do this.
As you talk about cash-starved organizations, I think about the tens of millions of dollars that the candidates are raising who are running for president in 2008. That money, majority of it, of course, going to the major corporate networks for advertising.
Right. Well, it, you know, it's an obscenity. It's I can imagine people in third world countries looking at, you know, someone like Hillary Clinton raising $35 million dollars for her presidential campaign that goes to really, you know, non-productive means, and they see that, and they just, it's just really immoral, I believe. And we're spending $12 million in Iraq. How many people could that help in our, not only around the world, but in our own country? You know, it is very immoral and obscene what we do with our resources.
There was a time when you said you would run against Hillary Rodham Clinton for her stance supporting war.
I never said I would run against Hillary. I was heavily recruited or drafted, or people were from the state of New York just really wanted me to run against her for her Senate seat in New York. I did say threatened to run against Dianne Feinstein here in California, though.
When we come back, I'll read to you some of what our listeners and viewers and readers have written from around the world. And I also want to ask you more about your family. As you wrote in your Memorial Day letter saying you're stepping back from the anti-war movement, you talked about sacrificing your 29-year marriage and wanting to come home to your children. We're talking to Cindy Sheehan. We'll be back in a minute.
I dreamed I saw
Joan Baez singing Joe Hill at Camp Casey, August 24th, 2005, a few weeks after Cindy Sheehan established Camp Casey, where ultimately thousands of people came, many of them who lost loved ones in Iraq, sons and daughters, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers. Cindy Sheehan joining us in Sacramento. She just flew home yesterday after releasing a letter on Memorial Day called Good Riddance, Attention Whore. Why did you call your letter that, Cindy?
Well, that was one of the last slurs that I read before I decided that I had, you know, had enough. And it was Memorial Day when I read that. That slur against me on a so-called left blog, a left-wing blog. And it was Memorial Day. I was in Crawford, Texas, And I thought, I had just also talked to my oldest daughter who had just been to the cemetery to put flowers on Casey's grave. And I thought, what am I doing here? Why aren't I home with my children?
You talk about your 29-year marriage. At the time you were establishing Camp Casey, making international headlines, your marriage was crumbling. And your children, your surviving son and daughters, talk about them.
Well, I have a daughter, Carly. She's in university right now. She was Casey's next youngest sibling. And then a son, Andrew, who is a land surveyor in the Bay Area. He's doing really great. And my youngest daughter, Janie, who's a massage therapist. And it was a struggle when I first started doing this, and when they saw their mom and dad, it ruining their mom and dad's marriage, it was, you know, a lot. They had just lost their brother, and their mother went on this, you know, this mission, this passion to end the war and to hold somebody accountable for their brother's death. And they're just so strong. I dedicate my book to them because they have gone through a lot, and they're coming, they get stronger every day. They get more capable every day. And we went from a family where even though mom worked full time, she did everything for the kids. My children were the center of my life. We were involved in every aspect of their lives. And it was very hard for them to adjust to the new life without their brother. Their mom and dad divorced. You know, they thought that they were going to be, you know, a family that was together forever. But, you know, April 4th, our entire universe changed. And, you know, the members of my family, they wanted to go back to April 3rd before Casey was killed. And I knew we could never do that. I knew we would have to move forward and forge a new life together, a new family together without Casey there, because our family was never going to be the same. And it was a struggle with my children, but, you know, we have regained a very solid relationship. I want to now, instead of spending quality time with them, I also want to spend quantity time with them. I want to be able to alleviate some of their physical stress that they have, to, you know, be there for them. Carly, this is her last quarter at university, and she'll be graduating. You know, I want to be there for her, to help her through this. She's majoring in history. I majored in history. It's very exciting to be with her and to have conversations, mature adult conversations with her. So, you know, I want to get to know my kids as adults, and I want to be there for them, you know, help forge this new relationship that we have and give it a good foundation. You know, it's been a relationship that's been, you know, very inconsistent because of my travel. And I now share a home with my two daughters. And now when I go away, I miss them even more than I did before.
Cindy, headlines around the world this week. Guardian of London, Shi Han quits as face of U.S. anti-war fight. Xinhua News Agency, China, activist Cindy Shi Han ends her anti-war campaign. Al Alam News Network, Iran, anti-war mom gives up campaign. Melbourne Herald Sun, Australia, grieving mom walks away. Ontario Now, Canada, Cindy Shi Han throws in the towel. Your response, and are you concerned your decision could deflate some of those in the anti-war movement? What words do you have to say to them, and especially families who have lost loved ones in Iraq, soldiers who are in Iraq, soldiers who have come home?
Well, you know, I have, in those hundreds of emails I've gotten in the past couple days, there's been many from soldiers in Iraq. There's been many from family members who have loved ones in Iraq, and from people all over the Muslim world telling me, please, please don't give up, don't abandon us. And I just want them to know I'm not. I'm pulling back. I'm, you know, getting some rest. I'm trying to restore my health. I want to come back stronger, but I'm not coming back the way I was before. We're going to seriously reevaluate our place, and when I say our, I'm talking about Gold Star Families for Peace. I'm talking about the Camp Casey Peace Institute, my skeletal staff. We're going to, and my sister Dee Dee, of course, we're going to just hunker down and find a way that we can be more productive, that we can be more useful to humanity. Like I said, I've come to a dead end in what I'm doing now. We found a chink in the armor. We exploited that chink. Now most of the country is on our side. I don't think we can work with the politicians. When we come back, we won't work with or against politicians, but we'll work with humanity. Since I've been traveling the globe, I've met so many people who have been encroached upon or damaged, or their families damaged by this corporate military imperialism of the United States. We want to help them, and we're hoping by helping our brothers and sisters around the world struggle against the imperialism of the U.S. military and the U.S. corporations, that it will have a residual effect in helping America. We don't want to abandon our soldiers there in the field like the Democrats did. You know, last night I was on Air America. Laura Flanders calls it the sacrifice the troops instead of support the troops. We don't want that to leave them abandoned in the field. We don't want to give the impression to the people of Iraq that they have no hope. But I just want to let you know that I was just a small cog in this movement. It's a large movement, and I think that this will encourage people to step up to the plate. And I sacrificed too much for this movement. And I'm not blaming anybody except myself. I was a willing participant, and I would be willing to keep sacrificing if I thought we were making progress, if I thought my sacrifices could help. But I don't think that it's helping anymore, so we're going to pull back and figure out how we can help. But, you know, people need to step up now, and everybody in America is going to have to sacrifice something. We have too much. We work too much to get things that we don't even need, while 24,000 people a day die of starvation in the world. So everybody is going to have to sacrifice a little bit. If everybody sacrificed a little bit, a few people wouldn't have to sacrifice so much.
Cindy Sheehan, I asked you about messages to people here, of course, and there's the Iraqi people, and people do know of your activism there. What would you say to Iraqis?
You know, I would say that we are still there trying to help you, trying to end this horrible occupation, that my new organization that's going to be humanitarian in nature will do everything we can to help alleviate your suffering. And I just hope that the people of America finally come to the realization that you are our brothers and sisters. We all share one beating heart of humanity, and that we cannot allow our leaders to do what they're doing anymore. And, you know, it's very important for people in America to struggle against our system, to hold the Democrats to the same standard of accountability that we were trying to hold the Republicans to, and to force an end to this occupation. And that I'm not going to work, in this political system anymore, because I don't have the energy to do that anymore. But it's very important that everybody keep up the struggle.
I want to read a few of the comments of our listeners and viewers and readers around the world that came in at democracynow.org. On electoral politics, Gordon Brown, a teacher in Switzerland, asked, "Who do you believe would make the best next president of the United States?" Leslie Bonnet of California writes, "Will Cindy join the Green Party, which has steadfastly advocated for peace and against invasion of Iraq? Will Cindy consider running as presidential or vice presidential nominee with the Green Party?" Barbara and Graham Dean said, "What can all of us in peace and justice movement do now to give you back your hope that we can indeed change the dangerous course this government has forced upon this country?" And they asked, "Would you consider running for Congress?" Paul said, "Given what you've described as the corruption and deception that exist in both the Republican and the Democratic political parties, and how the huge appropriations of money for defense contractors have become such a force in the U.S. economy, do you have any hope we will return to being a nation that stands for right instead of being a nation that has to have something to fight. And another listener, viewer, John Stauber, says, what is your opinion of MoveOn and the role it played in the recent congressional debate over war funding? Take your pick.
Well, of course, I'm not going to run for election. I'm very disillusioned with our political system. If we don't wake up in America and realize that we have to vote out of our courage and integrity for candidates who reflect our own beatitudes and not the beatitudes of the war machine and the corporations, we're doomed. And if we don't get a viable third party, or some people say second party, you know, the Democrats and Republicans are so similar and their pockets are lined by the same people. We are. Our representative republic is doomed where, you know, George Bush has assumed all the powers to himself and Congress has given him those powers. And we really need an opposition party in this country. But we vote out of our fear. We go and we vote for the lesser of two evils, and we always end up getting somebody evil. And, you know, I say evil not in the Christian sense of the word. But, I do believe that. I'm not going to join any party. If I do vote again and if I do become, politically active, it will be independent. And I'm not going to, of course, run for anything, be in the system. I have been asked by the Korean Party to run for president, but, you know, that's not anything that I want. And I know John Stauber. He has been struggling against MoveOn. I was really upset with MoveOn, and plus with the corporate media who were characterizing MoveOn as the anti-war left in America, which was just really, for people who are on the inside, know how hilarious that is. So I think that MoveOn has a lot of resources, and they should be trying to represent, you know, truly represent the opposition to, instead of being, you know, so tied in with the Democratic Party, to really represent the views of the left.
Cindy Sheehan, what do you think are the greatest successes of the peace movement so far? And then, of course, what you want to see changed?
Well, you know, I think that we did an incredible job of educating America about causing a debate, really, in this country about the Iraq War that didn't exist before August of 2005. It didn't exist in a public way before August of 2005. And the shift in the country has been enormous, to being against George Bush and against the war when it was overwhelmingly in favor of it. And we thought we were doing something good when we elected Democrats. We thought that we were electing them to change the way things are going, not for this to keep the status quo. And I think that we've been very successful in raising awareness where things have to go now. And, you know, I've been saying this for a long time, is that we have to be willing to put our bodies on the line for peace and justice, that, you know, we can't work on short-term Band-Aids. We need true solutions to the problem, to this corruptness, to this stranglehold the corporations have on our government. And we can't just put Band-Aids on them. Like, ending the Vietnam War was major, but people left the movement. It was an anti-war movement. They didn't stay committed to true and lasting peace, and that's what we really have to do.
Cindy Sheehan, we have 15 seconds. I have the sense, as you talk, that you're not actually leaving as a public face of the movement, but stepping back perhaps for a few months, a few weeks to regroup. Is that accurate?
Well, and we are, what I like to think about is, like, we're closing down the factory, we're going to retool, and we're going to open up, and it'll be a new and improved version of it. But we are definitely going to come at it from a totally different direction.
Cindy Sheehan, I want to thank you for being with us, co-founder of Gold Star Families for Peace, speaking to us from, well, near her home. She's in Sacramento, California. That does it for today's broadcast. If you want to email us, email mail@democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire. From Doug Caduce, John Hamilton, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.